Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. November 22nd marks the 50th anniversary of that fateful day in Dallas when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Like so many Americans, I remember the moment when I heard the news. I was in first grade and the teacher started crying as she broke the news. It hit me hard since just a few months earlier, my mom had pulled me out of class and taken me to watch the young president's motorcade down El Cajon Boulevard in the college area. He had just delivered a commencement speech on June 6, 1963 at San Diego State University's Aztec Bowl before 30,000 people after being the first person to receive an honorary doctoral degree through a California State University. Kennedy spoke of the importance of public education. He told San Diego State University graduates,
"One of the most impressive, if not the most impressive, accomplishments of this great golden state has been the recognition by the citizens of this state of the importance of education as the basis for the maintenance of an effective free society. This fact was recognized in our earliest beginnings at the Massachusetts Bay Colony, but I do not believe that any state in the Union has given more attention in recent years to educating its citizens at the highest level, at the doctoral level, graduate level, in the colleges, state colleges, the junior colleges, the high schools, the grade schools. You recognize that a free society places special burdens upon any free citizen. To govern is to choose, and the ability to make those choices, wise and responsible and prudent, requires the best of all of us. No country can possibly move ahead, no free society can possibly be sustained unless it has an educated citizen whose qualities of mind and heart permit it to take part in the complicated and increasingly sophisticated decisions that pour not only upon the President and upon the Congress, but upon all the citizens who exercise the ultimate power. It is an extraordinary fact of history, I think unmatched since the days of early Greece, that this country should have produced during its founding days, in a population of a handful of millions, such an extraordinary range of scholars and creative thinkers who helped build this country. Jefferson, Franklin, Morris, Wilson, and all the rest. This is a great tradition which we must maintain in our times with increasing strength and increasing vigor."
President Kennedy also spoke of the importance of providing equal opportunities to all Americans and praised California for its investment in making higher education affordable, a fact that's worth remembering in today's era when tuition rates have soared far beyond what's affordable to many families and there is talk of raising rates even higher.
"The first question and the most important, that every American boy and girl have an opportunity to develop whatever talents they have. All of us do not have equal talents, but all of us should have an equal opportunity to develop those talents. Let me cite a few facts to show that they do not. In this fortunate state of California, the average current expenditure for a boy and girl in the public schools is $515, but in the state of Mississippi, it is $230. Nearly three-quarters of the young white population of the United States have graduated from high school, but only about two-fifths of our non-white population has done the same. In some states, almost 40% of the non-white population has completed less than 5 years of school, contrasted with 7% of the white population. Make it clear that American children today do not yet enjoy equal educational opportunities, for two primary reasons. One is economic, and the other is racial. If our nation is to meet the goal of giving every American child a fair chance, because an uneducated American child makes an uneducated parent who produces, in many cases, another uneducated American child. We must move ahead swiftly in both areas.
The president added that he also saw investment as education as an important way to reduce unemployment and illiteracy in America and lift people out of poverty, ultimately boosting the economy. The president understood firsthand the importance of educating our nation's children. At the time of his death, his daughter, Caroline, was my age. His young son, John, was the same age as my little brother. Kennedy's closing words seemed directed at me and countless other children who came with their parents to see this young president who was an inspiration to so many Americans and people around the world.
I have traveled in the last 24 hours from Washington to Colorado to Texas to here, and on every street I see mothers standing with two or three or four children. They are going to pour into our schools and our colleges in the next 10 or 20 years. And I want this generation of Americans to be as prepared to meet this challenge as our forefathers did in making it possible for all of us to be here today. We are the privileged. We are the privileged, and it should be the ambition of every citizen to express and expand that privilege so that all of our countrymen and women share it.
And there's the presidential address, greeted warmly by the 30,000 people here in Aztec Bowl, by the President of the United States, John Fitzgerald.
El Cajon police seek public help to find a missing El Cajon woman. Her name is Anne Louise Terhune. According to family members, she left her home on Tuesday, November 19th, around 5:45 p.m., and told them she was going to the El Cajon Library at 576 Garfield Avenue near downtown El Cajon. She was last seen driving a 2004 gold-colored Mercury Marquis four-door sedan with license plate 5KLY673. When Terhune did not return after several hours, her family became concerned and called the police to report her missing. Officers were able to confirm that her 2004 gold Mercury crossed the U.S. border into Mexico later that night. According to family members, it would be out of character for her to enter into Mexico, said Lieutenant Frank LaHaye. Anne Louise Terhune is 50 years old. She is white, 5 feet 11 inches tall, weighs 175 pounds, and has brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information, contact the El Cajon Police Department at area code 619-579-3320. You can remain anonymous by contacting Crime Stoppers tip line at 888-580-8477.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine on KNSJ. The Helix Water District Board has voted to spare Lake Jennings from closing, but only temporarily. The district recently took back control from the county of Lake Jennings, a reservoir and recreational facility in Lakeside that's popular with hikers, campers, boaters, fishermen, birdwatchers, and other outdoor enthusiasts. At its meeting in early November, several directors on the water board indicated willingness to vote to close Lake Jennings permanently or to remove camping facilities and stop stocking the lake with fish to save money. But in the end, after public testimony and a proposal by Director Joel Scalziti, the board unanimously voted to form a committee instead and see if an alternative can be found to save the lake. Carlos Lugo, the general manager, led off, stating that the lake has been a financial drain on the district. A consultant's analysis predicted that even investing in major upgrades would not result in profit. Public testimony was split among tax hawks, who wanted the district to stop subsidizing the lake and shut it down to save money for ratepayers, versus residents who enjoy day visits or overnight stays at the lake and want to see it spared. Bob Reed testified, "We subsidize libraries. I don't think that was a waste of money. We support art because it adds beauty to our life." He said he only recently discovered Lake Jennings, which he called a hidden gem. He added, it's underutilized because a lot of people don't know about it. He urged that the board keep the lake and its facilities open, concluding, government should support certain things just for the beauty of it and the benefit of the people in this district. But ratepayer Frank McCulley testified that the lake is not profitable and suggested it should be privately run. He added, if only 1% of ratepayers utilize the lake and we're told we're subsidizing those using the lake, we need another option, lease it out or see it maximize benefits to taxpayers. After the public testimony, the board members voiced their views. Director Chuck Muse indicated he would prefer option 1, closing the lake forever to the public. He cited a net loss of $120,000 and noted that two of the most ardent supporters voted against the rate increase. He said he could also support option 2, closing campgrounds and ending stocking the lake with fish. But, he added, under no circumstances would I support option 3 or 4. Options 3 and 4 would require major investment in upgrading and modernizing the lake's recreational facilities. Director Scalziti said he was appalled at the alternatives and said an earlier workshop presentation in September did not offer enough information, only gloom and doom. He chided the board for failing to get another consultant's analysis. He said, when my truck needs a new transmission, I take it somewhere else to get a second opinion. Scalziti acknowledged that some subsidy would likely always be needed to keep the lake open, but he said that short-term, the cost of running the lake is already calculated into the budget to benefit everyone in the community. We haven't put effort into trying to make this work, he concluded, adding, that lake is the heart of our district. Director Deanna Verbecki said, I don't think we should keep this campground, but she added she wants to keep the lake itself open. It's beautiful, it is an asset to our community, and we should have it more like Lake Murray with a walking path all the way around, she observed. But as for camping, she concluded, I don't see any way that we can make money. John Linden, another board director, said he saw no reason to go any further with discussions. He indicated his decisions are made strictly on business sense and noted, the advisors said there is no way campgrounds will ever make a penny. We should stay in the business we are in, the water business. He voiced support for option 2, keeping the lake open without the campgrounds and without fish stocking. Director Kathleen Coates-Hedberg said she would support forming a committee and voiced skepticism over the consultant's dire predictions. The campground was 77% occupied 2 weeks ago, she observed. 90% of those campers say they love it and will come back. 50% are return customers. I think it's more about trying to get the message out. She asked if the lake has to require a state fishing license, noting that Santee Lake does not. With the majority of the board indicating a willingness to tear down the campgrounds and two willing to close the lake completely, I asked to testify. I was the final speaker, and I pointed out that at East County Magazine, recently we've been covering a growing number of government-owned recreational facilities that are partnering with foundations so that citizens can help raise funds and support their public parks. I listed some examples, such as Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation, Friends of Lake Murray, and Friends of Palomar Mountain State Park. That last one raised $70,000 in just a few weeks, enough money to prevent the state of California from permanently shutting down Palomar Mountain State Park. I also mentioned that a broader media effort to inform the public about the lake's attractions could help boost attendance and revenues. In the end, the board voted to support Director Scalziti's proposal for a short-term committee to explore more options and determine if there is a way to save Lake Jennings.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. As the 2013 holidays approach, we'll be bringing you holiday events as they happen, or in our preview section at the end of Destination East County. We'll also feature ongoing holiday activities for you. The Mother Goose Parade will be held for the 67th time on Sunday, November 24th, always the Sunday before Thanksgiving, in downtown El Cajon. The parade rolls out at 10 a.m. at the corner of East Main Street and Magnolia Avenue and continues eastbound on East Main Street to 2nd Street. Spectators can look forward to marching bands, local dignitaries, and parade floats. After the parade, they can stop by Mother Goose Village at the Prescott Promenade for activities. Three Perspectives on Nature, an art exhibit, is being featured at the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation's Visitors Center. The public is cordially invited to a reception in honor of the artists on Sunday, November 24th, from 1 to 4 p.m. The exhibition highlights three award-winning photographers, Debbie Beals, Darcy Hook, and Janice Rodebush, and will be on display at the Visitors Center Art Gallery from November 16th through December 13th. Descanso is hosting an arts and crafts fair this Saturday, November 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the historical Descanso Town Hall, where shoppers can enjoy free refreshments, listen to some wonderful live music, and purchase handcrafted items, all while taking in the fresh mountain air along with a little backcountry hospitality. Camp Beneath the Stars in the Anza-Borrego Desert this Saturday, November 23rd. Astronomer Scott Baker will host this unique event, bringing along his 14-inch telescope. A chuck wagon dinner will also be provided. The event is hosted by California Overland Desert Excursions. Their upcoming events include a journey to the Salton Sea and camp out during the Geminids meteor shower. The Lamplighters Community Theater presents a staged reading of Hot Flashes, the comedy. Curtain times are 7:30 p.m. on Friday, November 22nd and Saturday, November 23rd, and 2 p.m. on Sunday, November 24th. Another event taking stage is the ongoing You Missed, a new comedy program packed with humor, lots of strange stories from around the world, political perspectives from the right, left, and people that just don't give a darn. You Missed is performed live at the Space Bar in La Mesa on Sunday nights from 6 to 7 p.m. Now for some ongoing holiday events. Viejas Outlet Skating Rink in Alpine is open each holiday season and winter, where skaters and non-skaters alike may enjoy this outdoor ice rink, which is larger than the famed Rockefeller Center rink in New York and the largest in Southern California. Guests can enjoy shopping, holiday decor, and entertainment, and then skate or sip hot chocolate ordered from the rinkside snack bar menu. If skaters bring a new unwrapped toy worth $5 or more by December 4th, they can get a discount on skating prices. The Santa Train, the North Pole Limited, is accepting reservations now for this ongoing Christmas rail journey every Saturday and Sunday from December 6th through December 21st. Starting at the Campo Railroad Museum with fun and good cheer, guests will board the Limited. As it leaves the depot, Santa's elves will serve cookies and hot chocolate. An onboard book reading of a popular Christmas story leads up to the arrival at Santa's workshop, where the train will stop just long enough for Santa to board the train for the return trip to Campo. Santa will visit with all of the children on the train. Reservations are required in advance. Grossmont Center Shopping Mall in La Mesa is offering a series of free events each weekend in December, including concerts, crafts with the Grinch, Mrs. Claus, Santa's Elves, and Frosty the Snowman, and gift giveaways. We will be bringing you details in the upcoming weeks. Now for a preview of some other events, Waddle and Trot 5K is a new East County Thanksgiving tradition on Thursday, November 28th at 8 a.m. Pathways Community Church will be hosting the second annual Waddle and Trot 5K and Fun Run. This fun family event is intended for runners and walkers of every fitness level, and all proceeds go to Santee's, Santa's, and the Santee Food Bank. A fun run is planned for kids aged 10 and under and kicks off at 9 a.m. within the Pathways parking lot. The Lakeside Historical Society is hosting its 25th annual holiday home tour on Saturday, December 7th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy a self-guided tour of five unique homes in the Lakeside area, including one with an exceptional view of Rattlesnake Mountain and two Marina Valley homestead cottages with collectibles, Clydesdale horses, antiques, and unique decorations. Ticket sales help preservation efforts and can be purchased from the Historical Society's Old Community Church on Main Avenue in the heart of Lakeside's Historic District. The History Center is open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., or you may call their office. The Lakeside Museum next door to the Historical Society Church will also be open on tour day for guests to see antiques donated by Lakeside Pioneer families, as well as the Mrs. Claus Christmas Resale Shop.
Ho, ho, ho!
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, San Diego's only big cat and exotic animal rescue, has an upcoming Christmas festival on Saturday, December 7th from 12 to 4 p.m. Guests will be able to watch the Animal Friends open presents, as well as shop at this event with lots of local vendors. Food, entertainment, and Santa Claus are also offered. A VIP package is available. Arbor Day at Mission Trails Regional Park is being celebrated at the Equestrian Staging Area on Saturday, December 7th at 9 a.m. The public is invited to take part in the donation and or planting of oak trees. Volunteers may help with the planting or act as cheerleaders. Volunteers are also needed to pull weeds and help with general landscape maintenance of the area. Some shovels will be available, but it would be helpful if you could bring your own. Gloves and comfortable shoes are recommended. Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights rolls out along with a snow festival on Friday, December 6th at 6:30 p.m. This event is organized by the Alpine Chamber. Young Actors Theater will be staging its production of Home for the Holidays on December 12th through 15th at the Encore Theater on Campo Road in Spring Valley. This musical celebration is a two-act, variety-type show with group opening and closing numbers. In between, there will be small groups, solos, duets, and dance numbers with a Christmas theme. The Salvation Army Croc Center's Croc Kids Junior Theater Company presents the holiday classic Babes in Toyland with some fresh new music throughout the weekend of December 13th through 15th at the Joan B. Croc Theater. Showtime is 7 p.m. both Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sunday. This family-friendly performance features more than 30 local children ages 8 to 17 years. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well.
More California children are getting the health care coverage they need. A report from Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families says between 2010 and 2012, more than 100,000 California kids gained health insurance, which puts the state's uninsured rate among children at about 8%. The Georgetown Center's executive director, Joan Alker, says despite high poverty rates and a weak economic recovery, children's access to health coverage is improving through federal and state programs.
Very few Americans are aware of the success that our country has had through Medicaid and CHIP in reducing the number of uninsured children. And I think that's an important good news story that needs to get out.
Overall, Kelly Hardy with Children Now says the report is encouraging because kids need access to medical care in order to stay healthy and do well in school. She credits the expansion of Medi-Cal, which is California's version of Medicaid.
Currently, about 50% of all kids in California are insured through Medi-Cal coverage. So that's been really picking up the slack when people lose private coverage.
Hardy says a better job needs to be done to inform parents that most children in the state are eligible for some type of health program.
Either Medi-Cal or through Covered California, or, of course, through their employer coverage. And that kids really need to be covered so that they can get the care that they need.
For some groups, the report says the progress hasn't been as significant. Alcor says nationally, the rate of uninsured Latino children is at 40% compared to the overall rate of just over 7%. She says part of the reason might be that parents who are immigrants may have a language barrier or be fearful of the government. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The Federal Aviation Administration has announced it is tightening up regulations of foreign pilots training in the United States after several crashes and after some instructors blew the whistle on safety concerns. An investigative report by an NBC TV station in the Bay Area raised questions over whether foreign pilots are getting enough training time in the cockpit. This all adds fuel to concerns raised by East County residents over the safety of foreign pilot training right here at Gillespie Field. In the U.S., pilots train for years either in the military or general aviation or both to gain at least 1,500 hours of flight time before they're allowed into the cockpit of a commercial jetliner. But the FAA has given out over 4,800 licenses to foreign pilots last year alone, pilots who came here from Asia or other places to train, many of them with zero flight experience. Now, the FAA has announced new requirements for training of foreign pilots following the crash of a Continental flight into a house in Buffalo, New York. That plane was flown by a recent graduate of the Aviation Cooperation Program. The crash killed 49 people and was attributed to pilot error. An Asiana flight that crashed in San Francisco occurred after two new graduates of the Foreign Pilots Program set the speed too low for landing. Transpac Aviation Academy in Arizona, which trains foreign pilots, has had three separate fatality accidents in recent years. Flight schools have also had numerous non-fatality accidents, heightening safety concerns. NBC interviewed an instructor who said he quit his job over safety lapses, and that instructors were pressured by flight schools and foreign airlines to pass students who were not ready. Within a year, the students were flying wide-body commercial airliners. A second instructor called the process an indecent hurry to graduate students. Student training typically lasts a year or less, with 180 to 200 hours of flight time in U.S. flight schools, followed by 40 to 60 hours of more flight time back in their homelands overseas. Sue Strom heads up Advocates for Safe Airport Policies, or SAFE, a citizens group in East County that has been advocating for more attention paid to safety and a halt to training of foreign pilots at Gillespie Field. She says ASAP has been concerned for years that our freedom to enjoy our clear skies and livable communities has been preempted by the little-known Aviation Cooperation Program run by the FAA to train international students over our neighbors. Strom added that the latest news proves that we are not alone. Scandinavian Aviation Academy in El Cajon trains foreign pilots from China. The flight school has been involved in its own share of issues. Back in 2006, a Cessna owned by the academy collided with another plane and crashed over a residential area in El Cajon and La Mesa, killing three people. More recently, Neighbors have complained of low flight patterns over homes near Gillespie Field as the Academy has boosted its enrollment of Chinese student pilots, although the Academy has denied the low flights. The new FAA requirements aim to improve pilots' ability to manually fly the planes, including handling mid-air stalls and wind gusts. The FAA also ordered tracking and remedial training for pilots with inadequate performances, as well as training for better pilot monitoring and improved runway safety procedures. For KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Hello, I'm Sergeant Mark Vernon with the Sheriff's Department, assigned to the CATCH team, which investigates high technology and internet crimes. Families love posting photos on Facebook, Twitter, and Flickr, and other social media sites to show their family and friends what they've been up to. But did you know these snapshots could be revealing a lot more than you think, and exposing you and your family to serious danger? When you take a photo with your cell phone, you could be giving away your most personal location information through geotagging. It's when a GPS-enabled smartphone saves the location of where you took the photo. It's basically broadcasting your location at any given point in time. With the right software, the geomarkers embedded in the photos you post online can tell a pedophile, stalker, or burglar exactly where you took the photos, right down to the sideline of the field or the bedroom in your home. That means criminals can pinpoint the exact spot of your child on a playground, where you live, and where you hang out. Burglars can also monitor your postings and activities to find out where you go and when you aren't home. They can then use that information to plan a kidnapping, break-in, or other crime. So what can you do about it? It's easy. Just turn off the GPS feature for photos on your phone. It won't affect any of the other GPS applications such as maps, web search, or lost phone tracking. Here's how you turn off the photo GPS on an iPhone. Just go to the settings, then hit privacy, then location services. There you can turn off camera tracking as well as any other apps you don't want tracked. The process for an Android phone varies, so please ask your phone provider for assistance. And remember, be careful what you post online. If you want to report internet crimes, call 858-565-5200.
The state of California is proposing to release a violent sexual predator in Hukumba Hot Springs. A hearing on December 23rd will determine his fate. Mickle Marshall spent 14 years in prison for molesting four boys ages 4 to 8. In each case, he was known to the families of his victims. He was later committed to a state mental hospital and completed an inpatient program for sex offenders. A court has now ruled that he can be released, and the Department of State Hospitals has proposed that he be placed at 42920 Desert Rose Ranch Road in Hukumba Hot Springs. Supervisor Diane Jacob had this to say. With his ugly rap sheet, Mickle Wayne Marshall belongs behind bars for good, not out in our community putting San Diego County residents at real risk. No neighborhood should be treated as a dumping ground for sexually violent predators. If the law does not allow him to remain behind bars, the only other spot for this vile man is outside the gates of Donovan State Prison, where other sexually violent predators have been located, she said. At least two sexually violent predators have been placed in rural East County in recent years. Both violated the terms of their release and were sent back to a mental institution. Now, the public can comment on this proposed location before it's finalized by the court. Your comments must be filed between November 25th and December 4th via email at sdsafe@sdsheriff.org. That's sdsafe@sdsheriff.org. There's also information on how to submit comments by mail on our website. A hearing is set for December 23rd in Department 15 of the San Diego Superior Court before Judge Howard Shore in downtown San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
I'm Leon Thompson, and today I'm here with Miriam Raftery, the editor of East County Magazine. Nine East County Magazine team members combined to win 11 awards in San Diego Press Club's Excellence in Journalism Awards, presented October 29th. East County Magazine has won a total of 58 journalism awards since launching in 2008. So, Miriam, who are this year's winners?
I want to congratulate everybody on our team. We're very proud of them. And in alphabetical order, our winning team members are Nadine Abbott, Park Ewing,
Paul Cruz, Brian Lafferty, Ron Logan, Jim Pelly, myself, Miriam Raftery, Sierra Robinson, and Darren Sefcik.
What are some of the winning topics?
Well, our winning news entries dealt mainly with those compelling public health and safety issues, wildfires and industrial-scale energy projects primarily, although we also picked up some awards for photography, feature writing, commentary, and one of our columnists also won. We also took a first place for multicultural reporting, and that was for our story about the Native American Heritage Commission declaring Ocotillo Wind a sacred site and chronicling the ordeal that the Native Americans have had in dealing with the federal government over this wind project.
So what are some of the energy issues that you've covered?
We've done a lot of stories on wind energy that won awards. Some of the titles were The Betrayal of Boulevard, Can This Happen to Your Town Too?, An Ill Wind Blowing, that was an editorial that I wrote, Where is the Wind?, which took second place in investigative reporting, and Wind Turbines Arrive in Ocotillo as Residents Complain of Dust Bowl and Third World Conditions. I'm also especially proud of one of our interns, Sierra Robinson, this year won an award along with Nadine Abbott and myself for a series on wind energy issues called Supervisors Blow Off Residents' Concerns Over Wind Ordinance. And that was all about how the residents were bringing up information about health information and serious risks posed by these projects. And yet, four of the five supervisors, Supervisor Jacob being the notable exception there, but the other four voted to enact a wind ordinance that would allow these industrial-scale turbines in rural areas, basically ignoring many serious concerns.
Tell us about the winning stories on fire issues.
Yeah, we had one that was about the 1,900 acres of wilderness that were scorched in the San Felipe fire, and that was a controlled burn that actually went out of control and raised a lot of interesting questions. Plus, we picked up an award for a story on how the Palomar Mountain Volunteer Fire Department is fighting back against a county takeover of the rural fire departments.
You mentioned that you had photography awards. Tell me about that.
Ron Logan is one of our photographers, and he actually took first place in the still photography news category for an image he shot of the Space Shuttle Endeavour's final journey. It wasn't East County, but it was an amazing image, so we ran it anyway in our photos of the week. Darren Sefcik took third place for his photo counting sheep on the annual bighorn count in the Anza Borrego Desert, and one of those photos of his sheep also won a first place in another photo contest recently that we sponsored.
So which one of your columnists picked up an award?
We're very proud of Brian Lafferty, who's our movie reviewer. He picked up an honor for his On the Silver Screen review of the movie Before Midnight.
Oh, congratulations. Who won the most awards?
Well, on an individual basis, actually, I got 8 awards, and that was tied for the most awards received by any single journalist this year. Now, you can go online, and you can read all of our winning entries at eastcountymagazine.org. And if you want to see the winning entries by other publications around town, as well as TV and radio station entries, you can go to the San Diego Press Club site.
Thank you, Miriam, and congratulations to you and your crew.
It's been a team effort, and we really appreciate it. And this is also a good time to mention that we are always looking for community volunteers that we can train. Many of these people that won awards were not professional journalists. Some of them are. Others are citizen journalists that we've helped to train.
Help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition.
We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Reel to Reel. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists. I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Reel to Reel. Good evening, everyone. Another Reel to Reel is about to come at you. I've got Corey Wilkins' band with me. Guys, say hello.
Hello. Hey.
So we are live, actually, at B&S Brewery tonight, which is a little different than we normally are, because normally we're in studio with our band. This time, we decided to take it on the road and actually do a live recording. So let's just, you know, start out with an easy one. And how did you guys get started?
Well, Laura and I are brother and sister, and started writing some of my own stuff. And I realized, like, the first thing a band needs outside of, like, a front man is a drummer, you know, keep the rhythm section together. So my sister Laura was in college at the time, and she came home from Christmas break, and I was like, hey, you need to come play my drums, because I need to start to show you how to play, because you're going to play drums for me. So anyway, eventually she started playing and really, really got into it. Then we moved to Florida, lived there for a couple years, played a bunch of gigs. That's where we kind of really came of age musically, I guess. We just played so much.
You know, you guys obviously are a country rock band. What kind of musical influences did you have when you guys got started?
Well, for Laura and I, when we grew up, we had a lot of music in the house. Around 1988, my parents started going to, like, this real fundamentalist church where, like, any music you listened to that wasn't Amazing Grace was Satan music. And so they got rid of all the records, but they kept this one, like, Springsteen record, and they hid it in their closet. And Laura and I found it one time, and we snuck it to her bedroom and dubbed it on cassette, and ended up listening to that. That was, like, the only music we had to listen to outside of what they were playing in church for, like, 5 or 6 years.
guys play really well together. I think that you guys really do a good job of bringing that onto the stage. Now, is the dynamic when you're putting the music together, is it similar to that, or do you just throw something out on the table and go, okay, guys, we're playing this and let's go with it?
I am an absolute, what's a good word?
Slave driver.
Nazi.
Yes. Yes. You notice the unanimity here.
If you don't show up and don't know your part, you're dog meat.
Oh, no. No, I can come in with a song and I can come in with a vision, and these guys say, okay, we see exactly where you're at. We see exactly what you want. We'll do it. And we'll do a really good job of it.
That's because we've been trained to do
that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talk to a lot of bands. The first band that I ever played in, spent a lot of time with this band, and it was the first time I'd actually ever played drums in a band. And my bassist was sight impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the most amazing bassist that I had ever played with. But he was also the most difficult to play with, because I couldn't look at him and get a response out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys are in a little bit of a similar boat, because they have to take your cues from you in different ways.
And Laura
yeah. as and well.
Laura, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, so you've got your lead singer and you've got your backing, your back drummer, your anchor to the band that, you know, can't see. So how have you guys been able to overcome that?
We all know Laura is the real leader of the band. I pretend like I am because I sing. Laura's the boss. Laura is the real leader of the band.
Yeah.
But I can really intuit where she's going to go. And since we all understand she's the leader of the band, she can give everyone else visual cues. So she can give Steve and Eddie and Greg visual cues, and I can intuit what's going to happen.
It's been hard for me to think of in that way because I don't know what it's like to give visual cues. So Corey will say to me, give the band a visual cue when we go into this broke down section. And I really have to think about it because I'll forget if I don't really remind myself, because it's not natural.
Two, one, two, three, four.
When the female population didn't know when I was alive, didn't have no money, didn't smoke with the money, I couldn't even drive. Some girls like a Romeo and some girls like a Chuck. Some girls like a straight-ass student, but my things I'm not. Some like guitar. Funny little thing, at least six strings had some unexpected rewards. They were calling on the phone and I was never alone. As soon as I could learn to play three chords, found me a band to give me a hand, getting this one I named. Well, I might have signed a name, but they can't wait, get me going out this man. Like guitars. Yeah, some girls like guitars.
So where can we find out information about you guys?
You can go to CoreyWilkinsBand.com and our Facebook page at Facebook.com/CoreyWilkinsMusic, or you can find us on Twitter at CoreyWilkinsBand.com.
And if you want to check out samples of your music, you guys have a Reverb Nation page.
We do.
I think it's Reverb Nation / Corey Wilkins.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know way more than I do. Maybe Late Night Ed knew that. I don't know.
Corey Wilkins Band, all of you have been great to have on the show. I appreciate all your time and all your energy. Thank you so much, Dean.
I hope so.
Thanks for having us.
Again, folks, this is Corey Wilkins Band. This is Dean Bruce, Reel to Reel on KNSJ 89.1 East County Magazine Live. Everybody have a great night.
Reel to Reel is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Mwah. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.reeltorealsessions.com, facebook.com/reeltorealsessions, or you can email us at info@reeltorealsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
This is Miriam Raftery with a traffic alert. Caltrans has announced that eastbound State Route 52 will be closed Saturday night for paving and restriping, part of an ongoing project to repair dips in the pavement. The convoy ramp will also be impacted. On Saturday, eastbound State Route 52 will be closed from Convoy Street to Kearney Villa Road from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. on Sunday. Signs will be posted advising motorists of the closures and available detours. Motorists are reminded to slow down and safely move over a lane when Caltrans or other emergency vehicles are displaying flashing amber lights. It's the law, and violators can face stiff fines in a construction zone. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.